The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
I'm Lydia!
And let's talk Starman!
Woo!
This is our 35th episode of Talking Starman.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, today we are going to talk about the Shade miniseries number 3. And this is the Shade miniseries from 97, not the later one, for those of you who just really jumped in for this and only this episode.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. Shall we just dive right into the synopsis?
Let's dive.
Oh, wait. What do we do first?
I think before we do the synopsis, we talk about what was happening at this time, at the time this issue came out.
Sorry, I have a brain fog right now. Okay.
Oh, no. Fog of war.
Murr. June 97 was when this was published. I always get my terms mixed up. When this came out, let's just say that.
Yeah.
And I found one very important event that happened in June 97, and that was when Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone was first published.
Oh.
Woo! Book one. That's book one. Yeah, I picked this up because Harry Potter is actually very important to me. It really shaped the way I create a lot of my stories. When it comes to plot lines, because I do a lot of fantasy, I do a lot of science fiction fantasy. I think that's what you call it. So. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone was very important to me, and I actually was one of the very first people in my class back in primary school to read Harry Potter. I was a fan of it before it became really popular, so Harry Potter's actually very it's been a huge part of my life.
Nice.
Yeah. Do you like Harry Potter?
You know, I do. I'm not a fan of the movies really at all.
Same. I mean, I know, yeah, I'm more of a book fan than a movie fan. I like the movies, but definitely can't call myself a fan of the movies.
Yeah, I definitely fall under the... I don't even think, on the whole... I've only watched the first three, maybe four. And I think that... I don't even think they're good movies, let alone good adaptions. And I know some people, that's a kind of a controversial, oh no, someone doesn't like a Harry Potter movie, burn him type idea. But there you go. I really like Harry Potter. I didn't read them until 2004. And the reason I can remember that is because I didn't start reading them until, 2004 is right when I graduated from college and when I moved to Japan.
Oh, okay.
And I remember, you know, my mom, who works a lot with middle grades education, knew about the books and read them. And I was home and I didn't have a lot of books around, and we were about to go on a car trip to see relatives before I moved here to Japan. And she was like, well, here, why don't you just, you know, take these books with you? You can read them in the car, and, you know, if you like them, great, and if you don't like them, you can just throw them in the trunk. Don't worry about it. And it was a long car trip, and I remember before we came back to Savannah, I was like, hey, why don't we stop off and pick up the... Because she had the first three paperbacks, and I think the fourth book had just come out around that same time. And it's like, you know, next time we're in a mall, we should just stop by and get that fourth one so I can read it on the way back as well. So I kind of plowed through the first four books basically in about a week and a half. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, is kind of a decent amount of reading, but it was also visiting family. So, you know, once they're like, well, we're tired and going to bed, there really wasn't much else to do other than sit around and read.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed them. What I really liked, especially with the earlier books, and who knows, maybe this is kind of one of the reasons I like comic books as well, is in part of telling the overall story, I always get the pronunciation of the last name confused. J.K. Rowling? Rowling?
I think it's Rowling. I'm not sure.
J.K., we're, you know, me and her, we're friends like that. Does a great job of spacing out the main narrative with lots of side adventures and kind of side quests and things like that that really kind of keep most of the action flowing. Which, I mean, if you kind of think about, like, I guess in a way serialized TV, but especially comic books, that's a lot of what comic books is about, is here's a one-issue adventure that when you look in the space of, like, 12 issues, 20 issues, tells one story. Each and every little chapter is supposed to be kind of like a satisfying read, but it's all telling, it's using many stories to tell one story. And I think she does a great job of that, in the earlier books. And then as they kind of get along, you know, it kind of foregoes that. And don't even get me started on the last book, a.k.a. Angsty Teenagers Have a Crappy Camping Trip. But this isn't Brent and Lydia Talk Starman, unless you want to yell at me from, because I did just go on a little rant.
No, it's fine. And I just wanted to say that angsty teenagers, yes, but also I think Harry Potter isn't a very literary kind of work. It isn't, you know, literary writing. It's more dialogue based, and it's very plot driven and character driven. And, well, okay, to be very, very honest, I don't know if I can say it's character-driven, because I don't think the characters are hugely developed, but I really like, you know, how each of them have a role to play, and for the massive amount of characters that are in Harry Potter, I think J.K. Rowling did a very nice job of, you know, giving all of them screen time and having you remember that, oh, this is the guy with the glass eye, oh, this is Dumbledore, he is this kind of person, he had these motives, so I've read the entire series 7 times.
Wow.
Yeah, and some books more than others, but about 7 times, and I feel like there are a lot of things inside Harry Potter that were very sort of like groundbreaking for I don't know, like the whole idea of this kind of fiction, this world building, and I guess J.K. Rowling's own agenda, like, you know, depicting a little bit of like how Hitler was like, you know, in the form of Voldemort. You know, things like that, and I think it was a pretty cool entry point for me. I think an entry point for me, because I was very young when I read the books, so it helped me understand a lot of bigger issues. Yeah, so I think that back to what you said about the comic books and Harry Potter, like, I do see the similarities in that, like how they can be a very good medium for young people to understand what's wrong with the rest of the world. Yeah, that's very useful. Yeah. All right, so that's what I have for my calendar part.
Like it. And it really makes me want to talk with you more off air about Harry Potter.
Let's do it someday. But now we have time for your synopsis.
Yes. And it's kind of nice that we kind of go in a way from talking about something where you kind of put forth, and I'm changing your words a little bit, where rather than a way complete characters, we almost get more hints of character with a main trait, almost like archetype characters, to mm-hmm. going to this issue of Shade, because in a way that's kind of what this chapter of Shade and maybe the whole miniseries has been doing. Mm-hmm. Now in this we start off with the Shade once again writing about his past exploits, although this one, rather than being set in old London town, is back when he was a rampaging supervillain, or at least a hijinking supervillain. Mm-hmm. However, his what would you call it? Not quite brother in arms, but at least his main opponent, Jay Garrick, a.k.a. the original Flash, has retired because he's just not the hero for these days. But the hero for these days is the Spider. And oh no, it looks like the Spider has a secret. Dun, dun, dun! And the only one who can uncover him is... the Shade. So anyway, you know, they tussle, they fight, and the Shade ends up saving the day and the other hero and the hero's wife. And after that, they realize that they may have to be enemies, but at least for that day, they can be friends.
Nice. I like it.
Did you like the cover?
I did. I actually liked this one. I didn't like the rest. No. Like, I actually, when I saw this, I was like, oh, cool. You know how, like, I don't know. It was the way, like, his face is on a stick. Mm-hmm. It's like a mask.
Yeah.
But he's pulled it out, so his head is still, like, remaining there.
Yes.
Yeah, so I like the whole, like, otherworldliness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I didn't recognize the Flash. I was like, it's the Starman. And then when I started reading the thing, I was like, oh, okay, the Flash. Because, guys, you must remember, I'm still very new to the world of comics. And I'm actually a lot more familiar with Marvel than I am with DC. So I've honestly never, like, if not for Brent, I wouldn't touch anything DC. With a 10-foot pole? No, I'm just kidding. I would touch it with a 10-foot pole.
I find 10-foot poles really make it difficult to read a comic. I think being a lot closer to the comic helps.
Yes. Oh, but yeah. Yes, even after like a year of reading Starman, I still haven't... in the real world, I'm actually not that interested in watching shows like Arrow or Flash, even though I have access to them. Sorry, DC people. Okay, but this is a DC Comics podcast, so let's continue talking about this.
Well, for the cover, I just kind of want to say that, like, I'm of two minds of this cover. Almost like the Shade's two faces,
I see what you did there.
Very clumsily. one of them is that I really, like, as a cover, I really like it. I like this cover. I like the coloring of it. I mean, that somehow just putting the Shade in, like, his little pink outline really looks nice. I like the Jay Garrick on the cover kind of bursting through the cover, holding bits of paper as he goes through. As a cover to this particular issue, you know, I'm not so sure. It kind of, like, looking at this would make me think, and it does make me think that the Flash would play a more central role in this comic.
Right. Okay.
And really, he's a supporting character, kind of at best. And so it's, you know, and there's no real, there's no real challenge between these two.
Yeah.
So there you go. I do like the cover, and I've read enough comics where I don't want to say this is misleading, but I don't think it's as representational as it could have been.
Yeah, get what you mean. Oh, cool. All right. Shall we go on to the title and stuff?
Yes.
Hey, I like how it goes, when lightning strikes.
Boom!
There's an exclamation mark at the end.
you know.
Yeah, I like that. So this is called When Lightning Strikes, from the pages of Starman, The Shade. That's yes. The title. By James Robinson and Brett Blevins.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen Brett Blevins on one of these credits before, I don't think.
Yeah, this is, I'll admit I didn't look up his other work. It's a name I know, but nothing I can point to specifically for his other work. But this is, as you've probably noticed, each issue of The Shade has been done by a different artist/art team. So this is our first time running into him in our journey of all things Starman.
Yeah. Okay, shall we crack open
the cover? Yes.
Yes. Okay, and then we open the cover to I want to say The Shade. Yes, mm-hmm. I'm right. There's something weird that just appeared on my... Okay.
Oh, no.
Okay, no, we're good. Sorry, yes. Listener.
Well, we've got the Shade, and one thing I do like about Brett Blevins' art in this book is it feels more old-timey comics than a lot of the other art we've seen so far. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, it really does fit the age of it. Now, obviously if you were to look at older comic books, it doesn't line up exactly, but it more captures that spirit. Like,
right. It
feels both old-time comics and kind of timeless
at the same
point, which I really like. And, already just from that first page, you can kind of get that feeling from it.
Right. I didn't notice it until you just pointed it out, but I think it's it reminds me a lot of, storybooks, illustrated storybooks. Yeah, I won't be able to tell you whether they look like comic books or not, because I've explained, I don't know how old comic books look like, but I do get what you mean when you say, like, it's kind of old school.
Yeah, it feels nostalgic.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have The Shade kind of like reminiscing over stuff.
Yeah. And and one more thing I just kind of want to point out before I forget to say it.
Uh-huh.
Even on this page, we have on this opening page, we have The Shade making two of his shadow monsters.
Mm-hmm.
But because of this art style, even though, it does kind of clearly make the point this issue that he is kind of being a bit more gamesman with his monsters in at this time, the monsters, even when they're kind of more towards the horrific, still have kind of a cute quality to them than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah,
which I also like. I'm not sure if that was a product of the style or a choice used in the style, but I like it.
I see. I didn't pay attention to that. Nice that you caught it. Yeah. Okay. So, do we talk about the story?
Yeah.
So, we have... Recap. Ludlow hunting. Not really. It's more like that Ludlow's hunt for the Shade. Mm. But he hasn't met one
since
Marguerite, right?
Oh, Marguerite.
Yeah. So, there are a lot of things that he says over here that kind of, like, fly over the top of my head, but when Jay came out, I sort of, like, just put my faith in the narrative and felt like, okay, maybe I'll figure things out, as the story progresses. But didn't really, because I think that, like, if you're very familiar with the universe, you'd be able to know what's going on. Like, I don't know. I kind of guessed that Barry was Jay's brother or something. I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know who Barry is.
At this time in comics, to kind of keep things simple, there had been three main flashes There was this Flash, Jay Garrick, who kind of has that silver helmet, who's considered like the original Flash. And then, to just, again, keep things nice and neat, the after he retired, there came Barry Allen, who's kind of the second Flash and the first one to wear, like, I don't know if you can kind of picture the more normal Flash costume of, like, the pure red suit with, like, the... the first one to wear that was Barry Allen. Barry Allen is also the Flash that's featured in the TV show.
Right.
Then he had a sidekick, Wally West. In the 80s, Barry Allen died, sacrificed himself, and Wally West became the Flash. Went from being Kid Flash to just plain old Flash.
Right.
So kind of when you hear people talk about Barry in these comics, they're talking about a character who in this timeline, this current time, is dead.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if that really plays a part in this particular issue. I don't remember it, but that's kind of a succinct history of the Flash.
Thank you. That really helps. Okay. So we see that what I've gathered as well is the Flash's story takes place in a city called Keystone.
Yes.
Am I right? Right. So we're not in Opal anymore.
No.
Total. Yeah.
And we only kind of get a little quick nod to Opal.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm. Yes, we definitely do. Okay. Well, and then second page? Shade, book 3, The Spider.
So in a way, this right here is kind of a reveal in and of itself. Because, you know, the past two books, the Ludlow he is recalling is featured in this title. So kind of right here when we get the Spider 1951, we get the spoiler that the Spider is actually a Ludlow.
So. You know, it just flew over my head. I'm glad it did, though, because I was as surprised as the Shade was when the Spider revealed himself to be a Ludlow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, credits?
Yes. This issue has James Robinson, writer, Brett Blevins, artist, Pat Garahey, colorist, Digital Chameleon doing separations, Chris Eliopoulos as the letterer, and Chuck Kim, editor. And I really like this page. I like the layout. I like seeing the Flash, getting that sense of the feeling by the speed line, the almost like jolliness of the Shade, like, kicking his leg out and throwing his hand in the air to make the monster. The car wreck and the yelling passenger. You know, everything about this page just says, like, old-timey, good-time crime.
Right. And one thing I like about this is we are very... it's very clear what kind of crimes... What kind of crime it is?
Yes.
And it's a robbery. It's a the Shade robbed a jewelry shop, and I don't know. I just feel like the police security guard who's like on the floor. He doesn't look dead.
No,
there's no blood and stuff like that. So I just like to think about how, and we do see throughout the story that the Shade he has a kind of humanity in him despite not being really alive. He alludes to that. And the kind of crimes that he does is, theft and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of heinous crimes that people like the Spider did.
Yes.
That's what I really love about this series, this character. But we will probably get to that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. He just robbed a jewelry store.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, it kind of comes more blatant later in the issue, but I really like how this, this issue really kind of, in bold strokes, really paints the shade, seeing all of this, rather than him being, haha, I'm a villain who will do villainous things. He views all of this as a game, as a way of play.
And on a deeper level, as something that makes him feel alive.
Yeah.
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 So, okay.
And then on the next page, you know, it's a nice little watching TV in 1950. But you know, it's kind of more just about the Flash is retiring, and we kind of get. And, you know, the Flash is retiring. The Spider will be coming to Keystone.
Mm-hmm.
And Shay just kind of going, how indeed, while having a glass of wine.
Mm. And we also see that, well, is it here that the Flash endorsed the Spider? Yeah. Yeah, I think... over here we aren't like by at this page I was like I couldn't see where the story was going because it was so new superhero
yeah.
I didn't even suspect that he was gonna be the bad guy I don't know why but it was like that was the impression that I got. So I knew that he was going to face off with the Shade at some point, but I couldn't figure out why. And I don't know, I just like that. You know how sometimes some issues you're like, you know exactly what's going on.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. But this one I didn't have that, so I liked it. I liked that. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, if it weren't for the kind of the title reveal then I don't think I would have quite have known.
Mm-hmm.
But with that there, I was kind of like, all right, when's this going to turn to him being a bit more villainous? And just like a quick nod. I think this page does a little bit of like. Not quite play setting, but I guess time setting. Are you familiar? Like it mentions, he also said the HUAC's recent attacks on the Justice. Are you familiar with what like the HUAC?
No.
So this was now I'm forgetting exactly what the C stands for. The House Un-American. Committee? Convention? Jeez. As a right when I try and go into professor mode, I screw up. Nerds. but this was basically, if you've ever heard of, like, the McCarthy hearings, or the period in American history in the 50s, where they were really trying to root out all those communists.
Oh.
That's kind of a reference to this.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of in the world of comics, one of the ways they explain how there were less superhero comics going on during the 50s is by saying there was just a lack of superheroes due to those type of, you know, trials and people looking on costume crime fighters as being un-American. So this is more just like a little sprinkle of setting and kind of a nod to it.
Okay, thank you for that. I was thinking what that was. I thought it was an acronym for something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, the House Un-American, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hmm. Should we continue? Yeah.
Yes, please.
Hmm. I like the two different panels of on the next page of the spider fighting crimes.
Yes.
And I like how it's both heroic, but kind of knowing what we learn, there's also kind of a malevolence into how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. the villains look a bit more pitiful, and the hero looks a bit more...
Right, right. Yeah.
Mean-spirited.
Yeah. Like, overbearing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, why is he shooting an arrow at a musician? I was like, that poor violin. It's not. It's innocent. It's I don't know. And then the one at the bottom, the guys in suits, they don't look like bad guys. I mean, never judge a book by its cover, but you know,
yeah.
You know how like back in Starman, the villains tend to look like villains. like the mists, the female mists, her henchmen. Yeah, they look like the big bad, but these guys, they look like bankers. And I'm like, why is he beating them up? But so that was like,
and especially in that bottom panel, it looks like all three of the, you know, even if they are well dressed villains, it does look like all of them are pretty much out of the fight, and yet it looks like we're about like a second before the spider keeps pummeling the villain he's holding up by the shirt collar.
Yeah, true. Alright, so now let's flip the page to see if we can find out more about the spider!
Yes.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, and here's where we get kind of Jay's endorsement.
Yeah. Right. Through the same news broadcast.
Yes.
Yeah, and here we sort of realize that, okay, the spider is a crime fighter. He helped to eliminate the bad guys inside the water and power building. Yeah. And then here's where we see that, I guess this is where he gained the trust of Jay Garrick.
Yeah. So it's nice. It's setting. I don't really have too much to say about this particular page. I'm like, oh, nice.
Yeah, same. I do have stuff to say. I like the last two pictures at the bottom of the shade. I feel like this is a very different way of drawing him.
Yes.
Like, wow, his eyes are so blue.
Yeah.
And his expression, like, I don't know. It's really like what you said, you know, the whole old school storybook kind of. Yeah, it's like an illustration. I love it. Yeah.
I like it. I like it too. Sometimes I do kind of wonder if the way Shade is drawn when he's just kind of hanging out at home feels a little unshade-like. Like the body posturing feels a little too like relaxed.
Yeah, I get what you mean. But I like that. I don't know. It's like different people in different issues, they present, you know, different types of the shade. And I mean, yeah, we're all like that. We have like our different moods even when we are at home. We are different. I believe we all have different faces when it comes to our interactions with people, but even when we are alone, we sometimes behave differently with ourselves. I do.
Nope, so, not me. I am not I never to even when I'm asleep, I'm still just rambling, you know. It's how I roll,
right? Yep. Yeah, I'm pretty inconsistent. So yeah, I don't know if you call me inconsistent or I have, like, I'm bipolar. Oh, no, I shouldn't say that.
Would you consider yourself consistently inconsistent? Ooh.
Oh, wow. Mind boop. Self-censorship. How about that?
I like it. I like it. And I really like the next page where we have the spider looking arguably heroic as the shade again doing kind of what looks to be like a nice little jazz dance while making shadow gunmen shooting really huge bullets.
Right.
It's just a fun panel.
Yeah. You know that person with the teal, is that teal or cyan bow?
Yeah.
And is that the spider, or is that just someone who looks like him?
I'm pretty sure that's the spider.
Okay, cool. Because I was a bit I was a bit unsure just now.
Yeah, well okay, until yeah. until then, that's a good point. We've only seen him with, like, the dark gray bow, and here he is with a bright
teal
bow, being like, "I'm fighting crime."
Yeah.
And the next few pages, like, I almost want to see this as more of a mini series of just a goofy guy with a blue bow fighting against Shade, the, like, Disney version of Shade.
Disney version. Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun. But wrong company, right? I think like Marvel's the one with Disney.
Shh.
Oh, okay.
Don't give it away. But then on the next page is kind of when we get like a return to what we've come to know as the Shade, where he's holding a guy off a fire escape with a snake dragon thing. And the Shade has a nice little evil, "Why would you fear a hero so?" Where he just looks evil and scary.
Yeah, I agree. And he isn't... You can call him one of those kind-hearted villains, but he isn't beyond... He isn't above scaring people by dangling them off, like, the third story of a building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things I liked that I'm just now really solidifying myself on is that in this story we have the spider who is publicly a hero but has a much more darker private face is going up against the Shade who is publicly like a silly villain with shadowy powers that he uses more in goofy ways but privately is much more of a haunting villain.
Yes. That. Yeah, agreed.
Mirrors and mirrors. Ooh.
Yeah, and next page we see that the Shade is actually trying to uncover something.
Yes.
You know, after he dangles the guy off the third story and he goes like, "Why would you fear a hero so?" And then, you know, days into months, and then it's like a year since the spider's debut, and then we see like, okay, things we start to see the shape of the plot. So this is what's happening.
And what a great job by Blevins when we get to our next villain victim of the spider, of just making him look very wretched and pathetic in the, and I guess the more straightforward, he just looks pathetic way.
Like
you can just kind of feel the size GHS coming off of the surpriser.
That panel with him, his eyes that kind of tarine, how do you say that?
Like the really heavy dark bags under them.
Yeah, and how they kind of slope downwards. He's got a bit of like buck teeth, and I don't know, it just completes the look. It's pretty. And then, I mean, I guess he could have been, you know, a super like nasty person, but when you see him holding up the hooks, you just can't help but feel quite sorry for him.
I've talked about Blevins, but like, let's look at Robinson, what he's doing here, the way he gives just like the little tweaks to the to the syntax. "But the spider fixed it so I didn't have my powers no more." Like, it just adds
to
this guy probably already wasn't the most intimidating, threatening character there. "Oh, I was called the surpriser on account of my powers. I got some rays from each one of my fingers. No one knew what finger, what power I'd use."
Like, and the Shade. And the Shade is so cute because I'm sure you were most surprising. Like, and there's emphasis on most. So I really like that about James Robinson. Yeah. You get what you mean?
Yeah.
And for this page and the previous page, right, I felt like there was a bit of like a more purposeful cliffhanger sort of dialogue, right? You know, first was by the shade, why would you fear a hero so? And then here you have, oh, I know full well, like, why the spider would be so extreme.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like that bit, again, also the writing, like, it doesn't, it just pushes you towards the main part of the story without giving away too much. Yeah. So, because at this point, we are less than halfway through the book.
Yes.
So it makes sense to build it up. Yeah.
Well, and this is, I don't know, I really like this aspect of it, but it's kind of when we go to our next two pages, this is kind of where I get confused with the pacing of this story.
Right, okay, I can see why, yeah.
Like, it's not that I don't think that these pages are bad or anything, but they don't really seem to develop anything. They don't really seem to go anywhere. They don't really provide us any information that's needed later on. And, like, I don't know, it could be that this is kind of a reference to something specific. I just don't get. But it just, these two pages are just there, and they just kind of seem to be here to make a page count. But she doesn't come back in the story.
Yeah. At this point, I guess the readers are just going, okay, maybe another issue, you know.
Maybe the next issue this does play out, but for this particular one, like, I'm just kind of going, like, why are we getting inside the head of Linda Dalt?
Right.
Because I just don't see the point in it here.
Right. Yeah. Maybe it's like, you know, filler episode. Filler page. Yeah. Help it. Okay.
Well, and because then when we go to the next page, where, although admittedly in a less, like, you know, moody atmosphere, I mean, to go back to the Linda Dalt pages, the sky and the darkness, there's a lot of, like, oh my goodness, bad things are going to happen. What's going to happen to poor Linda Dalt? And the next one we get, like, sunshine and apple trees and Jay Garrick and his wife just having a nice little romantic snow. Oh, the shade's all like, I can't do this to my friend. Like, there's so much meaning in this one page that kind of makes you wonder, well, why were those two pages there?
Yeah, exactly. I see where you're coming from. Unlike that, I think the page here with Jay and his wife, it established a couple of very important things for this story. Yeah. So, what do you think they are?
I think we get kind of a reintroduce the idea that Jay is a nice guy. And I think that plays into it. And he's a nice guy, and he's a happily married romantic in a way. And then I think even more importantly, we get introduced, or we get further proof of the idea that the Shade has a lot of respect for Jay Garrick, and also has a true fondness for him. That would be what I kind of take out of it.
Yes, exactly. That's me too. I was actually quite touched, you know, by like how it all panned out in the end of this page. Like you know, the Shade. He's human. He's really and the dialogue and everything. Yeah. I don't know. I just felt so sad because there's this part that says, "And then I saw him and her and the life I could never have. And no friend would ask him to leave that. And there's so much in these words, and there's this pain in your heart. Yeah, I really like that. Yeah. And really props to James Robinson for that bit. I think it was very nicely, very well put, you know, from the top of the page, the kind of monologue that he let the shade write to us, because this is his journal. It's quite obvious, you know, with the parchment background in the word boxes. What do you call them? Yeah.
The caption boxes, yeah.
Caption boxes, yeah. So, I don't know. It was a very nice page. Really liked it.
And I really like how we go from this page, which, you know, for the most part, you could consider this as having like kind of a scarcity of words, and then almost for the next 4 or 5 pages, we go to just having so many words on the page. And, you know, still, like, I like these next few pages as, well, maybe not as much, because that's just a really cute page beforehand, but still, these, what's coming up is also really good.
Agree. Yeah, and, you know, storybook, though we say it is, it's not a storybook, because you know how in comics they would have, like, these repeated panels? And they do it, I felt that it was very prominent here because of all the dialogue. So to sort of like match up with the dialogue and the loading of information on the reader, they kind of like give you cuts of the expressions that come with these words.
Yeah.
Like the facial expressions and all these close-ups. Yeah. And that was really cool. Mm.
Yeah. These next few pages feel, at least to me, they feel more cinematic in a way. Like not in like the big exploding way, but like it's like we turned into a again into like a noir detective film.
Yeah. That's right. They talk about so here the story is about the shade finally confronting the spider, right? And he's like super calm, and we see that the shade, he can actually materialize from the shadows. Umbrageous trans teleportation, I think.
There you go.
Yes. I told you I wrote science fiction fantasy. Spent a lot of time on Superpower Wiki. Yeah, so over here it's where the reader gets the big reveal, I think. Well, the first big reveal.
Yes.
That so the spider is actually the bad guy, and this is how he's been operating.
Yes.
He has been back in St. Louis, he was like this big bad guy, and lots of people were afraid of him, and he was like accumulating stuff. What was he accumulating? Like, he was being very rich.
He was just kind of
criminal empire.
Yeah, getting resources and getting to be almost like the kingpin type figure.
Yes. So, and why he was fighting so much crime was because he was eliminating the competition.
Yeah,
and not really keeping crime low.
Keeping it secret.
Yes.
He's bad.
Yeah. And then, how did you find out? Asks the spider. And then we flip the page. Can we flip the page?
Flip the page.
Okay. And then, I really like this bit. I don't know. It's like with the shade standing in front of the fireplace. And because the previous one was kind of like, you know, they were talking to each other, so they were facing each other, and then over here the shade has his back turned to the spider, who's who has in his hands his weapons and stuff, because he's cleaning his bow. And the shade is like, whatever, I'm just going to turn my back on my enemy, even though he can shoot me from behind.
But because I am confident!
Yes, but that's the shade for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how. So many awesome things in that little panel there. Yeah. Okay, your turn. I've been talking too much.
No, I like it because I like the reveal of spiders being a Ludlow. I like that look of surprise. How, in a way, when the shade gets struck, you know, there's the electricity flash there, and there's almost that look of like, "Dolt!" on the shade's face, like, "Oh, I'm stupid." Kind of just for a moment, and then like, even though there's been hints at it throughout the book, it really isn't until we go to the page after, when the shade kind of wakes up, that Blevins really lets go with the crazy eyes for Spider Ludlow. Also, I like that Spider here was like, well, I have taken out the guy I've been hunting and who I wish to destroy.
Yeah.
I like how he said, but before, I need to go change into my superhero outfit.
Yeah.
I need to go get on my short pants and my belt. Like, I just, the comic books are great.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He's like all ready for, it's almost like a mating ritual. It's like, yeah, I don't know. You know that bit with I'm a Ludlow? The shade looking like what you said,
don't. Yeah.
Thomas Simpson, right? I was exactly the same. I was like, when I read I'm a Ludlow, I was like, oh, whoa! He's a Ludlow! I didn't see that coming because, you know, I didn't pick up on stuff like that. And then, but, so when, you know, on the other page, we see like how he's all this is what I mean, this is what I like about comic books, where they develop the character and they can do it through the pictures as well.
Yes.
Like, right, you know, you see the kind of personality that the spider has, and it's further reinforced by the dialogue that comes out on, you know, moving on to the later on the next page, where basically the shake sort of calls him out by saying, oh, you Ludlows never learn, you know, like, what was it, you had me unconscious, I'm not sure if you can kill me either, but you had your best chance of finding out then, right? But like a fool, you had to let me, you had to grow up. so you know, it's and like when you point out he had to change into a superhero suit and everything, so that sort of everything just ties in, you know, to his. We get the chance to infer that he's just a rotten guy.
Yeah.
So I like that very much.
And I also like how that line you just referenced really really lampshades the what Ludlow is doing here, what Spider is doing, you know, because there is that question that you want to ask yourself of, why is he explaining his plot? Why doesn't he just do it? Like, come on, you're a villain. But then you get it right there in what you just said. They like in the shade calls him on, like, nope, you needed to gloat. It wasn't enough for you to simply win. You had to make sure that I know you're winning, and because you wanted to do that, and because you're kind of an idiot, because, I mean, come on, fire, really? and there you go. And then just, I like that this whole book, in a way, if you just look at it as conflict-wise, this whole book is a setup for the four panels, in which the Shade uses his powers to actively go after Spider.
Yeah.
It's a very quick, very brutal, just, no, you don't, you do not win.
Yeah. that's exactly how the spider thought he was defeating Shade, and the means that he went through for those, it's like the direct opposite of what happened when he died, because he was, you know, the Shade was so decisive about it.
Yes.
Yeah, I liked also how it was quite literally death by shadow arrow. In his own coin, you know, paid with his own coin, where he's the archer, but he just got killed by arrows as well. And I thought it was like one of those super smart kind of like plot weavings where you think that he is weak to fire, but he isn't not like the way you thought he was, you know. Yeah, so that was very nice.
The whole, like, it's not the fire, in a way it's like, it's not the fire, it's the light.
Right. Yeah, because in the fire he has no way of creating a shadow, but because of he is not in the fire, there are a lot of shadows flickering in the room. And he uses that to basically defeat him.
And then we go to, in a way, to me, the rest of this comic. I mean, it's got some nice little moments to it, but in a way, this is more all about the relationship between Jay Garrick and the Shade.
Right.
And how kind of yeah, maybe a little bit before him, but especially at this point, from you know, here on out, they do kind of have that begrudging friendship, I think. I think we could call it.
Yeah, definitely. Because, well, I think the big part of it for me was he made it on time.
Yes.
The spider, he sent like people again. This whole plot thing I thought was quite genius, where, you know, they collected the residue and they wanted to frame him. And to me, it was quite believable, you know, that because he's a Ludlow and he has like all these probably resources, and then he's all out to get the Shade, and he's very explicit about that. And then, you know, when the Shade comes to save Jay Garrick, we realize that, Jay Garrick, was it? Maybe not this page. Excuse me. Jay Garrick is the Flash. This bit of information isn't privy to just anyone.
Yeah.
But the Spider knows it because he won.
He was the successor.
Jay's trust. Yes. Yeah, and it's a bit, when you think about it deeper, you realize that actually the spider's not, even though he's he was very stupid when it came to, you know, handling the Shade, he actually must have some sort of, you know, smarts, because we know that right from the first couple pages that Jay, he has wit and guile, you know, he's smart, and yet he still got fooled by the spider. And so we can also see like how the Ludlows, they're really, really bent on getting the Shade.
What it makes me wonder is, because in you could kind of say in the last two issues, the goal of the Ludlows has been kill the Shade. And this one, you know, the spider's goal isn't necessarily to kill the Shade. He even says it right there, like he doubts the Shade can be killed. It's to destroy him. It's to make whatever life the Shade has unlivable. And his whole plot and how he's going to do that isn't really going up against the Shade. It's to make the world see the Shade as more than just, you know, a costumed villain and an actual evil man. And I wonder if this will hold over into the next issue of this kind of maturation of the Ludlow's relationship with the Shade. And that's kind of what really makes me curious for that next issue, is we've seen hate, we've seen how hate and love conflict, and here we get more of the, like, well, we can't go for just simple death.
Yeah, that's true. Nice bit. Okay, and then back to the story. We see that everything just sort of unravels. Jay realizes that, oh, maybe this Shade guy isn't that bad after all. Yeah, and then we see the Shade saying, you know, you can't tell people that I was involved in this.
Yeah. And I like how when we kind of, if we fast forward through the newscast of what is widely released, when Jay kind of asks him, why did you choose to remain anonymous?
Yeah. Well,
I've standards to uphold.
Yeah.
He's got to live in the world too, which I kind of love that reasoning, not only because it's fun to think about it, but it's also because it shows in a way that this time the Ludlows actually had, or one of the Ludlows actually had a plot that made sense.
Right.
Like, here he is, you know, in a way, why does Shade not want this to be public? Because he's got to live in his world and his reputation matters to him. It's one of the few traces of humanity he has left, in a way. And so that's why that whole plot to take it away just really cuts home.
Yeah. I do think he says it a bit tongue-in-cheek as at the first bit, where he goes like, I'm a villain, I have standards to uphold.
Yeah.
And then he goes like, no, really. He's like, I can't have my fellow villains thinking I might switch sides and betray them. And he wants to use them, basically, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, maybe the whole thing is a bit tongue-in-cheek, but there's still that whole thing of he needs a place to fit and belong. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're told why he keeps coming back to Opal. It's where a place where he feels he belongs.
Yeah. I don't want this city. He doesn't want Keystone City, so.
Yeah.
That middle panel and the last panel, the middle one especially, where the Shade has, like, this crazy look in his eyes.
Yeah.
That's quite scary. I really like what Levins did with that.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and I don't know, not everything just sort of comes together, doesn't it? The part where he's like, it's distinctly possible I'm no longer alive. I walk and talk and make an exceptional quill moves. This part really got me. But I'm not certain I live in the conventional sense. So, I don't know, is it, he's just, it's a very Shade kind of thing to do, to say, and I like how James Robinson, he really, like, channels all his characters so accurately and makes them so consistent. Yeah, so I really like that.
And it kind of, I like how in some respects this issue ends at almost in the same setup as the beginning. Like, surface level, it's the same, but there is that kind of, you know, that recognition. But there was one moment, a lull in the fight where our eyes met and we both smiled.
Right. Yeah. And even though true, unlike how the cover seemed to allude to a more, to the Flash playing a more central role in this, it's nice to see, like, the beginning and the end have the Flash.
Yeah.
So it still sort of ties up to the cover.
At the end of this, there's been a question I've been wanting to ask you. And that's, you know, I guess in a way to give my answer first, which is always the best way to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I really have liked the Starman comics in general is, you know, when I first read Starman, I didn't have as much of an understanding of the DC world as I do now, but I felt like in reading this and reading especially Robinson's portrayal, his consistent portrayal of the older generation of heroes, it sparked an interest in me to like those heroes. And so I'm wondering, like, you came into this issue not really knowing who J. Garrick was, or kind of having a great sense of history of them. I'm wondering, did this have any effect on your thoughts towards this older character?
Oh, definitely. I think, I don't know if I felt like he was an older character, because it's very current for me.
Yes.
Being in this timeline. So, but it definitely gives me a greater idea of, like, where we are in the grand scheme of things, because ultimately this is still part of the Starman universe. And thinking about how this is 1951, I feel like I can link it back to Ted easier now. If I were to go back into the issues you know, that we've done already with Ted talking about his friends, I might have a better idea or a better grasp of who's who or what went on and stuff like that. So definitely this issue did give me a bit more perspective into that era. So and before we finish, could I say something else about the art?
Of course.
Yeah, I really liked how all of the shades conjured, you know, monsters and things. They looked a little bit different from the ones that we've seen. They seem a lot more creative in a way. Like this last page here, we have like a huge pair of scissors.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like the one that you pointed out earlier with the soldiers, the soldiers, shadows were like soldiers holding rifles.
Yes.
So, I don't know, it just felt less monster-y. It felt like he was having fun, you know?
Yes. Just
conjuring all these shadow images, I guess. Nice bit of creativity on Bevin's part. Really like that.
I liked it too. It's really fun.
Yeah. Okay, so it's to be concluded, says the page.
Yeah. Our next episode is the last issue of the Shade miniseries. And so until we come back, if people wanted to find you on the internet, Lydia, where would they go?
Come find me on YouTube. I'm at Quek Channel, Quek Channel. That's my username for all my social media, so you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Quek Channel as well. How about you, Brent?
Well, I'm a bit harder to track down because I'm not as consistent. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Dead Troubadour. You can go to my main website, which is Deadly Troubadour. Or if you wanted to just go to Facebook and like what I do there, probably it's my Brent Thomas author page is the place to go. Speaking of liking what I do, you know, if you wanted to throw a little change my way and support and appreciation, you can go to patreon.com/Brent Thomas. And if you do that, you'll be able to get up a rolling donation. Even a dollar helps to help me, you know, pay for the costs, get things going, and just, you know, makes me feel all warm and fuzzy on the inside.
Yes.
Well, right, yeah.
Yeah. We have to go, guys.
No. Bye.
Bye. See you next time.
There's a star. Now waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. children use it, let all the children boogie.